Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Dr. Rex Cowdery, Executive Director of the Maryland Healthcare Commission. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Tom Romeo. Rex, as we've talked a little bit about, it's my understanding that the commission regulates the market for health insurance for small businesses. What is Maryland's comprehensive standard health benefit plan, and what are you doing to enhance it while keeping costs in line?
The plan goes back to the 1993 reforms. The General Assembly looked at the small group market in Maryland and said, this is not working. They decided on several principles. One is guaranteed issue. Namely, if a small employer goes to the insurance company, asks for an issue of a policy, it will be issued. Second is guaranteed renewal, which is the same thing at renewal. And a third is no use of health factors in rating the cost of the policy and in establishing the premium. So you can only use age and, to a lesser extent, the location of the business. So those were the reform principles that it was based on to make it, in many ways, sort of fairer and to correct some of the problems at that point in the small group market. They also said in order to do this, you've got to have a standard plan that offers a specified set of services. So that's the standard part of it. The comprehensive is it's quite comprehensive. The only things that the commission currently excludes that are of significance are surgery for obesity and in vitro fertilization. So apart from that, it's a broad and comprehensive set of coverage. So those were the fundamental things that were established. And then we established a series of different delivery systems, an HMO and a PPO and an HMO with a point of service option. For example, those are like the basic designs that, you know, I think we're all familiar with out in the insurance market. And more recently, we've added to that high deductible versions of the PPO, which is familiar, and the HMO, which was less familiar and sort of an interesting concept to have a high deductible health maintenance organization. So those are the different delivery systems. Now, what problems does this create for us? Well, first of all, having a standardized and comprehensive plan means that it's going to be a comparatively expensive plan as well. That is less of a problem than the fact that it's a rigid plan. That is, it's very specific, which means the co-payments and the co-insurance are specified as far as the floor. They can be improved through riders, but the floor is determined. So that means that there's not a lot of flexibility that health plans can bring in from other states where they're experimenting with different ways of reimbursing prescription drugs, for example. So among the changes that we've made was to try to find ways to introduce more flexibility so that you can bring innovation into the marketplace without destroying the basic principles on which it's founded. So the pharmacy, we cut down the core benefit dramatically so that plans could offer a whole variety of different designs. Maybe it wouldn't be just generic preferred trade name and brand name and not preferred brand name, but maybe there would be other tiers that they would want that were based more on value, for example.
Now, in the last segment, we talked a little bit about coverage, and I understand that Maryland is taking steps to expand healthcare coverage for more working families and small businesses. So what is Maryland's health insurance partnership? And specifically, who is involved in this partnership, and how does it make health benefits more affordable and able to expand access?
The partnership came from a recognition on the governor's part, actually, that The biggest challenge lies in helping small employers afford health insurance. I mean, we know from statistics that the group that is least likely to offer and least likely to be covered are employees of small business, and particularly, the smaller the business, the less likely that coverage is. So recognizing that and feeling that we need to take progressive steps to bring those 750,000 Marylanders under coverage, one of the programs was to target these small businesses that aren't currently offering insurance. So that's the partnership. It's a partnership between the government, which provides a premium subsidy, between the employer, who puts up employer funds toward this, the employee, who generally is asked to contribute to the cost of coverage, and the carriers and brokers who both offer the coverage and, in the case of the broker, who sell it, who educate employers about the different options available to them and help them with the application process. So it's a broad partnership. Within government, we got a whole series of partners as well. The Maryland Insurance Administration, for example, the DLLR or Dollar, which does a lot of the regulatory and gathers information about small employer wages. So there are partnerships within government, but the main one is the partnership between the state of Maryland, the employer, and the employee to get more people covered.
Now, I also understand that the commission was given some broad guidance by the Maryland General Assembly, but that ultimately you crafted the details of the partnership within your commission. What were some of the design choices that you faced in developing the new state program?
Several things were important. One is choice, for employers to have a choice of carriers, for employees to have a choice of different plans. Some states have done this by just simply saying, you know, we're going to put out a contract. And the winner of the contract will offer the subsidized product. It'll be priced at a lower price. We'll pay the carrier. That'll be simple and easy. Well, that's great, except it doesn't offer choice. And often they've gone about designing a different product to be offered in that setting. So we thought, no, we don't want a second class or a different program. We want the same products that the employer can choose and receive help in covering the cost of that. So choice was one of them. We wanted it to be targeted, so we had to choose wages, but we didn't want it in a way that suddenly the subsidy would evaporate. So there has to be an ongoing commitment to providing the subsidy, which the General Assembly was pretty clear about. And there has to be a phase out of the subsidy rather than falling over a cliff. 2 to 9 employees, what happens if you hire your 10th? Well, does it evaporate? That would be terrible. I mean, that would be terrible policy to deter a business from hiring that 10th employee. So what we do is phase out as the company grows and phase out as the average wage in the company increases. They get the full subsidy, which is basically 50% of an HMO premium, if the average wage in the company is $25,000 or under. And then as that average wage increases to an average of $50,000, the subsidy goes down to zero. So in both cases, as they grow and as they prosper, things shouldn't disappear. And finally, we wanted to do it efficiently so we didn't have to build a whole government office to run this program and to handle a mountain of paperwork. We pay the total amount of the subsidy to each carrier. The carrier reduces the employer's premium that they pay, so all they see is the reduced premium, and they pass the employee's share on to the employee, so the employee sees a lower payroll deduction. So everybody sees a lower price, and we basically have to add very few staff members. It went active on the 1st of October. Coverage could be subsidized, and we'll see over the next few months how this works.
So, Rex, that sounds like a very impressive program to get access to care to some of those who haven't had access. And sort of on a parallel track, one of the unfortunate realities is that those without access to primary care tend to use hospital emergency rooms as their de facto healthcare facility. This puts tremendous pressure on an already stressed system. According to the Maryland Hospital Association, more hospitals are opening up free healthcare centers. Would you tell us about trends towards providing uncompensated care in more innovative and creative ways in Maryland, and what are some of the key benefits?
Yeah, I think we certainly see that. Hospitals obviously are interested in providing better care. I think increasingly hospitals see themselves as sort of a center of a system of care. More hospitals are actually hiring physicians onto staff, for example, and trying to develop closer relationships with particular sets of community docs and with clinics in the community. So some of them have gone about it by forming sort of community health centers that they work closely with and help subsidize. Others have set up clinics that may or may not be targeted specifically to uncompensated care. You know, one of the things we learned, it's not just the uninsured who use the emergency room for non-emergency conditions. It's the uninsured who work, you know, a long day and can't get there to their doctors during the day. Part of the issue is going to be, can we get clinic hours that run at different times? either public clinics or urgent care center type arrangements? Can we incentivize physician practices to offer evening hours? Because we know that offering evening hours reduces the likelihood that someone's going to end up in the emergency room, which we all know is a substantially more expensive way to provide care than in the doctor's office.
We talked earlier about the big three, quality, access, and cost. I want to shift to what Maryland's doing to control costs. From 2001 to 2005, hospital spending in Maryland increased $495 per capita from $1,351 to $1,846. Perhaps you could outline for us some of the key factors involved in the rising cost of hospital care and healthcare in general. And with this, how is Maryland unique among the states and how it regulates the prices that hospitals can charge any payer for a service?
Yes, cost is a huge issue. I mentioned cost as one of our three great challenges, probably the greatest. Cost is also the area in which we have succeeded the least as a commission and as a society, for that matter, as well. What drives the increases in cost? Well, to a major extent, really, it's technology. It's both new treatments, new interventions that are of varying degrees of value, frankly, and varying degrees of proven effectiveness. So a combination of technology increases our desires. A prosperous society's demand more healthcare. A market person looks at it and says, well, this is just great because people are spending their money where they want to spend it, and increasingly in a prosperous society, they'll spend it on healthcare. But other folks, employers say, for example, we cannot bear this burden and remain competitive in a global society. So we have to do something about that burden of cost. So that's the broad picture. Specifically in Maryland, we have a longstanding focus on a certificate of need, which is one way of helping attenuate cost increases somewhat. Basically, where they're going to be reimbursed by payers, need to go through a certificate of need process. So for hospitals, major projects go through approval. We have had a huge surge in growth of Maryland's hospital infrastructure. Over $4 billion over the space of 2 to 3 years in new hospital projects have been approved, after well over a decade of almost no projects. So there's a surge of building, a surge of replacing infrastructure, creating private rooms as opposed to semi-private rooms, that sort of thing. But it's all done against the context of looking at, is the cost reasonable of this expansion? Is it needed? Are excessive beds being added? We can say, no, you can't add that many beds. You have to cut down the number of beds based on what we expect utilization to be, you know, 6 years from now, for example. So it's a way in which we contribute to cost control, but I don't think it even begins to get at sort of the fundamental problem. Our incentives don't encourage cost control on any front. And also when we're ill, there is no cost that's too high for care. So we face big problems in terms of how we grapple with this as a society. And frankly, it's the area that we haven't done as well as we should.
Rex, I only have about a minute left, but I want to go back to this notion of value-driven healthcare. Could you tell us about the Commission's efforts to increase transparency of the healthcare pricing structures, the quality that we talk about, and pursue a value-driven healthcare model?
Yes. We think price transparency is important in principle, but we don't think it's used very much. We publish the prices of particular conditions, diagnoses in Maryland hospitals, what it takes to go in and have a hip replacement, for example. But as we've noted, that is basically not what drives choices. You've got to somehow link that information with incentives in order to help influence people's choices. And even then, they're going to go where their doctor recommends they go, by and large. So I think we have big challenges in the transparency area and in the question of whether publishing prices really makes a difference. I think what makes a difference is if you've got the incentives in place when the doctor and the patient make decisions and they know what the relative cost of different options is going to be. I think that's the kind of price transparency that will make a difference, not what we can publish on a website.
How is the state of Maryland using health information technology? We will ask Dr. Rex Cowdery, Executive Director of the Maryland Healthcare Commission, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.